Hello, and welcome to the 34th episode of the Ocean Decade Show, a podcast dedicated to guiding you down the yellow brick road of this global initiative to transform the ocean, housed within the American Shoreline Podcast Network family. My name is Taylor Gales, and I'm your host and tour guide on our adventure through the Ocean Decade. Since I've been doing this podcast for so long now, I can actually hearken back to previous episodes of the show, which I've been doing, I think, throughout this year, because everything that's new is old and everything connects, and it's great to be able to continue to tell these stories through different chapters over the course of time and over the course of this podcast progressing. So way back in April 2022, on episode 16 of the podcast, I interviewed IOC communications expert Vinny Lindoso about GenOcean, which is an international communications campaign to get people, especially younger people, engaged in the Ocean Decade. And in addition to speaking about the campaign, we discussed the crucial role that communications play in a massive international effort such as the Ocean Decade. Without communications experts, we would have no idea what was happening with all the fantastic efforts, their importance, their relevance, etc. That if you've ever, met a scientist, some of them are really great at communication. Some of them are really not. And if we relied on scientists to tell the full stories of the Ocean Decade, I think that we would be much poorer for it on an international scale. We need to have a real focus in communications experts to be able to drive us forward and to help people relate and understand what all of this means. So communications has always been a really key part of the Ocean Decade, and late last year, the IOC launched the Ocean Decade Strategic Communications Group, the SCG. So acronym of the month is back. SCG. The SCG, the Strategic Communications Group, provides strategic advice, as you would expect, and guidance on the design and implementation of effective and impactful communications activities that meet the decade's objectives. And they coordinate on joint practical communications initiatives. And so some different roles of this group are to review and comment on strategic communications plans and products for the Ocean Decade, jointly develop and implement specific activities, for example, around international days, key events like the UN Ocean Conference that's coming up next year, provide guidance on tools and mechanisms to monitor impact, provide advice to help increase the effectiveness and reach of Ocean Decade communications and marketing activities. Remember that for most people, the Ocean Decade is a secondary part of their job. It's not their main job. And so getting the rest of the ocean world and beyond to care about the Ocean Decade is challenging. And you have to break through the day-to-day somehow. And that's what this group can help do. They also help support dissemination of communications elements at the global, regional, national level, identify guidelines and best practices to help member states and other stakeholder groups communicate, that these are kind of these group of experts that they can go to and help, and assist in the identification of financial and in-kind resources, new partnerships to support communications activities. Believe it or not, that people aren't just throwing out money for the Ocean Decade overall, but communications in particular. So finding these strategic opportunities and these ways to go forward is really important. And everyone on the SCG, they're providing in-kind support for these communications activities by volunteering, by being part of this group. And they've really made a great effort to draw communications experts from across different stakeholder groups: government, media, arts, culture, private sector, philanthropy, civil society, academia, museums, zoos, aquariums, that any part of the Ocean Decade that can communicate, we're trying to be represented on this group. So today I'm lucky enough to feature one of the co-chairs of this group, Dr. Carly Weiner. Dr. Carly Weiner is the Director of Communications and Engagement Strategy at Schmidt Ocean Institute and has more than 13 years of experience in marine science communications, working on everything from research, outreach, evaluation, and professional leadership. She holds a bachelor's degree, graduated magna cum laude in communications, and her master's and doctorate degrees in environmental studies from York University in Toronto, Canada. So that's the charming accent you will be hearing on the show today. And her research focused on integrating natural and social science methods, which I can fully appreciate as a social scientist in my background in the natural science world, while examining dolphin swim tourism in particular. I could do a whole episode on that. She previously held the position of communications manager for Centers for Ocean Science, Education Excellence, Island Earth, and prior to that, worked as the research and outreach specialist for the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology Northwestern Hawaiian Islands Research Partnership at the University of Hawaii. Say that five times fast. She also hosted the monthly marine science radio show, All Things Marine, for 6 years. So I am feeling a little bit of pressure on this episode since I have a fellow broadcaster on the other side of the microphone. Thank you so much, Carly, for joining me today.
Well, thank you for that generous introduction. I have never heard anyone call the Canadian accent charming, but I love it.
Well, I have the pleasure of having interviewed someone on every continent except for Antarctica for this podcast, which is really exciting. But I think, and I would have to go back to check, that you might be the first Canadian, which is pretty, yeah, I'm just checking new boxes all the time.
All right, I love it.
So I gave a bit of your introduction, but please tell me and tell us a bit about you and what's been your path to the Ocean Decade. How did you end up involved with this group and the Ocean Decade overall?
Oh, it feels like so long ago. I have to think about that one for a second. I started actually at the first foundations meeting that took place in Denmark before the decade really even got kicked off. And this was with several philanthropic organizations coming together to try to generate support for the Ocean Decade in advance of it happening. And it was really a pleasure and felt very fortunate to be there to really see on the ground level where the vision was and help to craft that vision, what they wanted to achieve out of the Ocean Decade and how to move forward. Interestingly enough, this took place literally as the pandemic was starting and we were getting notifications on our phones like, hey, borders are closing, travel shutting down. And I am a bit of a germaphobe even before COVID, was freaking out a little during the meeting and asking our executive director, Dr. Jodhika Vermani, you know, hey, should we be leaving? Like, do we need to get out of here? What's happening? And it turns out that was the last in-person meeting we did for about 2 years. So it was an interesting start for sure.
For sure. I was just starting my Knaus Marine Policy Fellowship working on the Ocean Decade at that time. And I remember my supervisor at the time, Liz Terpek, had, I think she was at that meeting or was somewhere else in Europe at the time. And yeah, everything was, it's weird. You always remember those exact moments. I remember coming back from a briefing in DC with Craig McLean, who was the head of NOAA Research at the time. And I was on the metro and I was like, oh, good. It's chilly. So I'm wearing gloves. So I'm safe, because that's all we knew. It was like, I'm not touching anything, but of course, no mask, breathing, everything. Just funny how our perspectives change.
Yeah, it was an interesting start. And I think actually, sort of indicative of some of the early challenges in the decade, in that, you know, how do you have one issue that affects people globally? And how do you tackle that? How do you communicate that to all these different stakeholders, all these different audiences, all these different languages and cultures that are affected by the same thing? And you see the same thing with the oceans and the challenges and how to get people to care, to understand, to protect, to support these initiatives around better understanding, better research, better science, better conservation for our oceans, and making messaging that applies to everybody. It's a challenge.
Yeah, especially because in the very, you know, in my limited communications experience, when you're doing a communications plan, the first thing you do is identify your audience. And if your audience is everyone, it makes it challenging.
It really does. I think we can go back to the basics and just be like, do you like to breathe? Do you like to live? Well, then you're our audience.
And yeah, the ocean should be your best friend. Exactly. So you mentioned the Schmidt Ocean Institute, and I mentioned it in my introduction. So tell us a little bit about your role there, because it relates to how you're involved with the communications group of the Ocean Decade. So what is this organization, its purpose, and how has, you know, Schmidt been really involved with the Ocean Decade itself?
So Schmidt Ocean Institute has been around for quite some time, since 2009, as a philanthropically funded nonprofit organization. we had a research vessel, Falkor, that people may be familiar, may or may not be familiar with, that sailed around the world doing cutting edge ocean science. This year was a very big year for us in that we obtained a new vessel. We donated the previous vessel to the Italian research agency, and now we have Falkor 2. T-O-O, that represents the next phase of our organization. And alongside of that, we released a 10-year strategic framework. And a lot of what we aim to do is part of that broader Ocean Decade mission. We are really focused on exploring the unknown ocean. So really generating interest and trying to generate information to provide an understanding of our ocean that we really don't have, particularly the deep sea.
And that's not the easiest place to study or to work on. And so it's, and to fund especially too, that, you know, that exploration and the unknown, it's hard, but it's what captures hearts and minds, even if it doesn't relate to, you know, management or policy today or tomorrow.
Yeah. And we are able to do that in a cornucopia of ways. But really, the thing that's so exciting is that our research platform is brought to people globally at no cost to the scientist in exchange for open data. So scientists can apply for ship time. We have a strategic framework. And within that strategic framework, we have shared our plans for the next decade of where the vessel will be. So you can say, okay, we'll be off the coast of Chile in 2024. You can apply for ship time and we will try to accommodate or review your request. And we provide the vessel, we provide the instrumentation and the mechanisms to conduct your research. And what's really great is we have the berthing space and we have the ability to welcome scientists from all walks of life so that we really can have transdisciplinary expeditions that are looking at holistic pieces of the ocean. So it's not just a biology cruise or a chemistry cruise. You have people looking at all different angles and not just from the sciences. We have an Artist at Sea program and we bring artists on board. We have a Birth of Opportunity program and we bring cultural practitioners or students or marine park managers so that everybody's working together to collectively look at this system and share regionally and then internationally the findings.
And that's exactly what the Ocean Decade, you know, is trying to do. It's a microcosm kind of that on a shipwide basis, you know, especially the interdisciplinary effort. And so the decadal plan for the Falkor 2, you know, lines up with, you know, the idea of a decade of ocean science too. What is it? How do you make a decade plan for a ship though? That's, I've thought about trying to plan the ocean, you know, the people who are planning the Ocean Decade. It doesn't even have to be as involved as what this is, you know? So like how that just seems like such a large undertaking.
Honestly, a decade is not a lot of time in the time scales that we work, particularly in ocean sciences. You know, it takes a long time to plan and organize research and then conduct the research, then analyze the data and then publish your findings and put it out there. And I think that's been one of the challenges that ocean sciences has faced as a whole is we're just not moving the needle quick enough, given everything that goes into planning and understanding. And same with the decade, trying to get Ocean Decade, trying to get global energy and global collaboration, that takes time to community build. That takes time to coordinate. And so it's really a target goal, if you will. But I think we need to move the needle quicker because things are happening so quickly. We have no control over how fast our climate is changing, over how fast things are accelerating with extrapolation of resources. And being able to work together and try to move that needle forward or quicken those timelines for information, for data sharing, for collaboration is really, really important. And one of the things that Schmidt Ocean Institute, as well as the UN Ocean Decade values, is technology and using some of that to help alleviate or to help move the needle forward.
You're right in that, yeah, a decade is just a blink in the eye of of a lot of science when you really think about it. So it's great to see the alignment, though, of what SOI's work is with the Ocean Decade, and you're kind of leading the charge in a lot of those ways. And just curious of what your role looks like at Schmidt in a week, you know, dealing with the Ocean Decade and all the other great things that SOI does. You have degrees in environmental studies and communications. Is your job what you kind of imagined it would be?
No, I could.
That's a knowing laugh. I like it.
I never dreamed of the things that I'm doing now. And I will say, I love it. It is, every day is different. There is not one day that is the same. And I have the fortune of working on so many different programs, especially focused on partnerships and communications, and being able to share the science that's taking place on our vessel, sharing the science that's taking place as part of the decade, and figuring out ways to make people connect with it, whether it's through pop culture, whether it's through a live stream that people can watch, whether it's through an impact report or press release. There are all just so many different mechanisms for communicating the work that's taking place. If you would have told the five-year-old in me that wanted to be a marine biologist that I would probably spend 8 hours of my day on Zoom, would have rolled their eyes. But, you know, a lot of it is community building, and that it requires meeting with people all over the world. And Zoom is just another technology that allows us to do that.
Yeah. As a marine scientist who gets incredibly seasick, that's something that I feel very deeply as well, that I thought you had to, you know, be on boats and do all that in order to be a good marine scientist. And It's not the case at all, and especially my stomach is thankful for that every day. And you're such a fantastic communicator, and you have helped Schmidt in the Ocean Decade really push a lot of these things forward. But one thing in particular that I wanted to make sure that we highlight before we get into the rest of the group is, in our pre-interview, we chatted a bit about some of these pieces that you're working on with SOI, and in particular your passion about related to caregivers in the ocean science workforce. And I think that's just another piece of, you know, the broadening and trying to make the ocean and ocean science work for all people, and to really embrace that kind of work going forward. So can you tell us a bit about that work and why it's so needed?
Yeah, I'm absolutely happy to do that. It's a personal passion project of mine for sure, as it is many others who have experienced caregiving and trying to balancing that with a career in ocean science. You know, ocean sciences and sciences in general is a unique area of work in that you're in school for a very long time. And so often you're delaying family planning or approaching it later in life. And there are times when you're traveling quite a bit, or you're out at sea or in the field doing research, where you're not having this traditional 9-to-5 office job per se, where you can be available and be flexible for taking care of dependents, whether it's elderly parents or children. And so how do we ensure that we are creating space for people that have dependents in the ocean sciences so that we're not losing out, especially in later or later stage careers, through attrition, especially our female participants?
That's so crucial and important, especially because the work that you all do is not just for, you know, parents of children, but it's for, you know, if you're taking care of older family members, things like that. And just that is practicing the inclusion that we need to have going forward. So thanks for highlighting that. I just thought that was such a unique piece of the work that you do, and just shows kind of how you personally are very holistic in how you think about this work, and you're bringing it to the big stages. So that's really awesome.
Schmidt Ocean Institute is very supportive of this, and they do that in many different ways. We not only talk the talk, but we walk the walk. We offer grants for caregivers that are going out to sea for long periods of time, like 30 days, so that they can have some support back home where they're usually available. And Schmidt Ocean Institute as a whole has been really supportive of several of our staff working on this initiative. We've been working on a white paper, and we've been convening with several others in the ocean sciences to discuss this matter and make recommendations through workshops on how institutions can better support their staff with caregiving.
It's good to remember that we are full humans, not just workers. And it's just a great way to do it, especially for people, yeah, who are out at sea and can't even imagine what that was like, what that would be like. So kudos to you and Schmidt. That's really exciting. And so about talking the talk, though, so you walk the walk, talk the talk. So getting to the strategic communications group. So you are one of the co-chairs. What does that mean? How did that happen? There's always kind of fun paths to this. And what does it mean to be a co-chair for this group?
So it is my second term as a co-chair for the group. So this is the second, two-year installations of the Communications Advisory Group or Strategic Group, Communications Group. The first round was the first group of the decade. And so that was really about getting a handle on the ocean decade, understanding what the endorsed actions look like, how communications could help them, where all the materials were going to lie, all the assets that were available, the development of the website, development of getting people on board and how to do that in a meaningful way. And of course, there was, you know, delays, as we mentioned earlier, talking about, you know, the start of the ocean decade around the pandemic. And that certainly created difficulty in rolling some things out because you couldn't have a lot of these in-person generative building meetings and conferences. But the second round now that I'm co-chairing with Ronaldo, who's based in Brazil, we really have a unique group, a very diverse and very dedicated membership for this advisory group. And within that, we have four subgroups where we can work on specific projects to accomplish or move the needle forward for communications. Now, we're not the primary communicators for the decade. We are just helping the decade with their communications because they have such a big job to do. And so how do we take what they're already developing, what they're getting, what they're accomplishing, and the products that they have, and how do we reach that to all ends of the earth, to all different continents and groups of people, and how do we enhance that, make the communications tangible for endorsed actions?
Yeah, because there's so many other pieces of governance, people who were working on the decade. And so, you know, triangulating between the IOC and the Decade Advisory Board, and that's not easy. And especially, you know, trying to align all those people in all those time zones and all those hours on Zoom. So how have you found the cadence of the group? As you said, you know, it's kind of evolved from your work at the beginning when it was setting up the decade, and now we're kind of entering into the long stretch in the middle, you know, where you have to keep people excited and keep people motivated. And so how have you seen that shift over your time?
Well, I've seen a real maturity in the decade as, you know, we come to work towards the midpoint, you know, of finding themselves sort of in terms of their messaging and what they want to accomplish and what they're doing. So I almost see the decade as sort of going into their like mid-20s now. They've kind of figured out that awkward teenage phase where like, who do we want to be and what do we want to accomplish? And now we have a clear understanding and we are moving forward to our mature adulthood and achieving those goals. And, you know, there's a lot of momentum coming up with some really big meetings and work that's being done. And I think with the endorsed actions growing and being collectively global, they are reaching that point where people are hearing about the decade and being able to contribute in meaningful ways.
And that's, I think, a real opportunity and challenge to do on a very global level and then on, you know, a hyper local level. So how has the group, or how does it plan to work, you know, on the very, you know, the activities that are super on the ground, super involved versus the kind of big global programs? Have we found that balance?
I can't speak for the decade. I can only speak for myself and somewhat for the for the communications strategy group that I work with. But I think, again, it's that balance of playing that local endorsed action role with the bigger picture. And one of the things that we are working on is how do we create some collective community around the endorsed actions, and how do we assist them with their communications? So that is somewhere where we can say, hey, here are some, you know, strategies or workshops or tools to help you communicate what you're doing locally to get support. And then here's a whole body of other endorsed actions that, you know, have a similar theme or have a similar action that's part of this larger global strategy. And, you know, there are people working on the high level messaging, working on, you know, connecting with governments globally and making sure that people understand how important the ocean is and ocean science for creating a healthy future.
And how have you been finding within the group? Because as I mentioned in the introduction, it's different groups and different people and different communication styles. How has that all been blending together? Because, you know, the way that someone in the government communicates is probably very different than how someone, you know, for a zoo communicates. And so what have been the kind of opportunities and challenges of that communications collaboration?
Well, you're not going to have a catch-all for everybody. So you're going to have different tools for those different audiences. Within the strategic communications group, we really have a diverse body of professionals working together. And I think that's kind of a nice collaboration because it allows people to bring their own experiences to the table. And so someone says, hey, I've got this great idea, and we'll share it. And someone else might say, well, that's, in a respectful way, that's a nice idea, but that would never work where I'm from or where I live for these reasons. We have a different cultural approach, or, you know, there's a real language barrier. And I think it keeps it honest and it keeps it realistic. And so that recommendations and work can be done with that global perspective.
Yeah, it's all about, I think, that those opportunities for sharing, but then realizing where there's differences and where high-level messages can only go so far. And that's, I think, the beauty of having so many different folks on this group and the four different working groups, which you mentioned briefly, but could you go into more detail about what those groups are doing and what role they kind of play with the group overall?
Yeah, there's no mystery to it whatsoever. We have four working groups as part of the strategic communications. The first is mentorship of Ocean Decade Actions. And so I alluded that to a little bit before in that we are working to try to provide content for endorsed actions so that they can improve their communications. Some endorsed actions are, you know, more advanced than others or have more support or resources than others. And so we're currently working on a survey of their needs, and that will be put into different tools as well as a communications workshop that will take place in 2024. Some of the tools that we are considering or that we're working on, for example, I'm leading a science communications training later this month in California, and we are bringing together many communications professionals, mostly science journalists that are well established in their field. And we're going to make sure we record that so that we can have that training and that panel shared with all the endorsed actions in case it's of interest to them or could be useful to them. We have accessibility and language working group, which my co-chair Ronaldo is taking leadership on. And that is really working on mapping initiatives and looking at opportunities to be more inclusive with the decade materials. We have an aquariums working group where we're looking at how the decade can use its communications tools in aquariums and museums and places where you're gathering large groups of people, and what messaging can we provide and how can we incorporate into the existing exhibits and materials that are available. And then we have a messaging and press engagement group that's led by John Steele, who runs Nautilus magazine, and he's working very closely with the Decade as well. And they're looking at creating a repository of content for global media, and then also working with a nonprofit Mobilize for the Oceans, where they can really use this as a concept or as a resource to spread stories throughout the media about the ocean and using John's experience working within the press. So those are the four groups, the working groups, and then the general strategic communications group will meet quarterly as well.
That's great to be able to kind of divide up the work in those facets, because yeah, all of those people need to know about the Decade, but just in very different ways. You know, how a journalist learns about it versus, you know, kids at an aquarium or things like that is so, so different. And how you can incorporate the overall pieces of the Decade, which fit very well into, you know, could fit into a lot of different stories that are being, you know, published today in the media. But having that kind of evergreen content and good sources of information, because just finding information and finding reliable sources is a challenge, and up-to-date information on all the cool things that are happening, both in the Decade, but then just the ocean world overall.
Agreed.
So this group meets quarterly. I anticipate that a big thing on your horizon is the Ocean Decade Conference that's happening next year. So last year we had the UN Ocean Conference, of which the Ocean Decade was, you know, a major component. But next year is the first in-person Ocean Decade Conference. There was, like we said, because of the pandemic, the kind of original kickoff was held virtually, and I got to convene one of the sessions virtually with this weird virtual background that they put on me, and it was like hosted by Germany, but no one was really in Germany. And so how is the Strategic Communications Group preparing for the Ocean Decade to be the main focus of this conference? And what goes into an event like this from the communications perspective?
Well, there's a lot, and I will not take any credit for that. That is all goes to the Ocean Decade team that does a lot of the heavy lifting and the planning and the legwork. And I know there is a planning group, a volunteer planning group as well, that is assisting them with the coordination. I can only imagine last year's conference in Lisbon was transformational, very large, and had a lot going on. And I think this one's going to be even bigger. We are still in early planning phases within the Strategic Communications Group, but we do have a call in this month to talk about how we will be planning and assisting with that. There are many communications initiatives revolving around this, from workshop training to, you know, accompanying social media and press, how to gather interest in this moment from the media globally, not just those that will be present in Barcelona. How do we engage with other groups? Last conference we had an artist exhibit, and I was fortunate enough to bring some of the Artist at Sea work from our Schmidt Ocean Institute's program to be showcased. We're hoping to do something similar again. And it's just how to engage people, not just the people attending the conference, but the public around the space. And so there are many, many cogs in the wheel that are working to put this together.
Yeah, I remember last year the giant tap with plastic coming out of it, which is, you know, this beautiful artist exhibit in Lisbon that just was striking. And I saw, you know, local people and tourists and people not attending the UN Ocean Conference at all walking by that, which was, you know, a couple blocks away from where the conference center was. And it draws you in a different way, and it helps you, you communicate your message in a way that words never could, you know. And I just hope that, because I remember last year, she might not appreciate me for saying this, but I think Jordica, the head of sustainable of Schmidt Ocean Institute, had gotten her luggage lost in Lisbon or on the way to. And so she was dressed fabulously in like kind of local clothes and just was the chicest woman there, with having to buy it all in Portugal.
I think she ended up getting her suitcase like 3 or 4 months later. It was a little bit of an ordeal.
Oh my gosh, it was that much later? Wow. Well,
yeah, but it was a fantastic conference. And I have high hopes that this next one will be even more spectacular in how it reaches communities and groups and moves the needle forward for the decade.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it too, especially to have it, you know, fully the focus of the Ocean Decade, where it was just kind of a flavor of the UN Ocean Conference, but it's going to be exciting. And something that we've kind of touched on throughout this and that I love your kind of thoughts on is, and that I've been thinking about from my perspective of hosting this podcast for almost 3 years is, you know, how have you found the best way to, how do you want to keep people engaged? Like we touched on this a little bit earlier, but how do you keep people engaged with interesting stories? How do you create a narrative arc with this whole decade? How do you take the work that's already been done and keep it lasting, keep it on people's radars in a time where I know that my attention span has decreased, I think, over the course of the pandemic and with technology rising. And it's a challenge for even the most expert of communications experts.
We talked about making sure that you're not just thinking about one audience or one group, but I think it's a constant drumbeat. It's not one big showstopper or one message one time. It is a consistent communication of ocean issues, ocean science, ocean everything, and making sure that that continues throughout the decade and beyond. So it's not just about, okay, in 10 years we're done, let's we've done our work, let's put our feet up. It's establishing that baseline so that moving forward it becomes easier to communicate about the ocean, to have people automatically care, and to do that work. There, I failed to mention at the conference in Barcelona, the Ocean Decade Challenge Working Groups, there's separate groups for each of the 10 challenges, will be coming together with white papers, looking forward about what can be accomplished and how do we move that needle forward following the decade. And each one of those is a group or compiled of experts in each of those subject matters. And so the 10th challenge is one that looks on how do we communicate, how do we identify ambitions for moving the framework forward, for engaging people with the decade and training the next generation. And so that particular working group will be working on answering some of those questions through that white paper.
And I'm sure the you know, strategic communications trainings that you're doing later this month and moving forward will contribute to that as well.
Fingers crossed.
So because you've been involved in the decade since before it even really existed, and ever since, from your perspective, what would a successful ocean decade be according to you? You know, once we've reached the end of the 10 years, and I think maybe you might have answered a little bit with even your last answer of, you know, it keeps going on. But what will have happened during these past 10 years that you would have said, yes, I'm glad that I was involved in this and that I was a leader in this and that we're able to push X, Y, and Z forward?
Well, there are so many people. I just have a toe in the water. There are a lot of people really steering the ship on this, if you will, so to say, with the decade team that have just poured their heart and souls into this and have the utmost respect for. I personally would love to see at the end of this decade that we've been able to transform how people think about the ocean, the prioritization of the ocean that's needed across all levels, across government, across institutions, and across everyday citizens. So really making sure that people understand its importance and how that translates more broadly in terms of support for sciences, in terms of stronger protections, in terms of how people think about their day-to-day activities, looking at it from a whole picture, and making sure that we've set ourselves and future generations up for not only understanding, but protecting the ocean.
Spoken like a true ocean lover from the very beginning, and a studier of dolphin tourism, which we could, I could do a whole episode just about that.
Well, I mean, one thing that actually I would say is even more important is meeting people where their interests lie. And so, to your point, not just talking to the ocean lovers, how do we talk to the ocean haters? There's got to be some out there. I don't know any personally, but actually, that's not true. I try and drag my son to the beach all the time, and he's like, I just want to stay home and play Legos.
So, you live in Hawaii, course, and your son hates the water?
I mean, he likes it once we're there, but given a choice, he will stay home and play Legos. And so how do we talk to all those kids that want to stay home and play Legos and make them excited about the ocean and have a tangible relationship with it? Or people that don't live close by to the ocean that are landlocked farmers, you know, what is their relationship to the ocean? And we have to look at how we create ocean content for their areas of interest. So Schmidt Ocean Institute has a program called Ocean Rising that we collaborate with Necton on, and looking at infiltrating pop culture with ocean content, and not necessarily doom and gloom, our oceans are dying, but here's some really crazy images of deep sea animals and how cool is the ocean and how can that play into fashion and sports and gaming and music and all these areas that other areas of culture that people have. And that is also part of the impetus behind our Artist at Sea program, right? How can we tell a story? How can we engage people using different mediums than a scientific paper? You know, you can do a lot with a visual artist and data. You can do a lot by using people's senses and tactile responses. So we have to figure out how we can engage people in a way that's approachable for them.
I love that word too, infiltrating, that it's kind of like the ocean sneaking up on you. It's like adults trying to put, you know, vegetables in, you know, anything and trying to, you know, but it really is about helping educate and meeting people where they're at. I grew up in the middle of the desert and had no idea about any of this ocean stuff. And the only time I had ever heard of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration here in the U.S., was I thought they were hurricane people. I'd hear about it sometimes, or crazy weather, you know, in the Midwest, and had no idea that they had all these ocean things too, that it just, you know, it's, it's helping people where they are. And that starts from, you know, a very basic level of education. And I've done ocean literacy stuff on here to then, we say this all the time, and I've heard it a lot in the ocean spaces, you know, like every other breath you breathe is because of the ocean. And, but how do we, you know, make other messages that hit people for what they care about? I would hope everyone would care about breathing, but sometimes it's, there's other things that they, you know, think they care about more.
There's so much involved in the language and how you communicate. Words really do matter. And we need to think about how we're constructing our language for all these audiences. I'll tell you a quick funny story. When I first moved to Hawaii, when I was much, much younger, and I was working in the ocean science space early days, and I was really excited to be involved and invited to participate in a NOAA expedition to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, even before it was the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument. I was talking to my grandmother, who's substantially older, of another generation, and telling her, oh, I'm so excited to be hanging out with all the NOAA folks and going on this cruise. And she's like, oh, who's NOAA? Is that your new boyfriend? And it's like, that is like a perfect example of the terminology that we get comfortable using and the acronyms we get comfortable using in the ocean space that, you know, nobody else knows that we have to remember how we use our language and how we communicate what we're doing.
My brother-in-law's name is NOAA, so it happens to me all the time, even though I no longer work at NOAA, that it's still something that hits me all the time. And I think that's so, because so many people who, you know, I think you and I talk to on a day-to-day basis know about the ocean and care about the ocean. And so it's about, and I think the Ocean Decade's trying to do this and has been successful in a lot of ways, like reaching the people who we don't always talk to. And how do you do that? And you have to do things differently, and you have to try different avenues, and you have to work with different partnerships, or else you're just going to be, you know, you can have the best communications in the world, but you're not hitting people where it where it matters.
I like to keep myself on my toes, and every time I fly on a plane or sit on a bus in public transportation, I try to strike up a conversation with the stranger sitting next to me and talk to them about the ocean or one ocean issue, or just kind of like test messaging randomly on people.
Oh my gosh. You're much better than me.
Yeah, I like to lie. Yeah, people that put headphones on, they sit next to me, they see it coming.
Well, you're much better than me. I like to lie, and I don't like to say I work in the ocean because people, it's funny, you would be appropriate for this, but they'd say, oh, do you work with dolphins? I get that. I would get that all the time, you know? And so sometimes I just say that I'm, you know, a banker or an engineer or something so that I don't, when you get the kindly old woman next to you on your, you know, 12-hour flight to wherever. So yeah, good on you. You carry around a little notebook and you're just like, okay, this doesn't work in Kansas, but this might work in Lebanon. I don't know.
I've given up on my 92-year-old grandmother who still like hasn't moved past the fact that I don't work with dolphins anymore. So she's still telling people I work with dolphins, and I'm just like, all right, we're just going to go with that.
My very best thing, I think family is a really interesting way to communicate, because I think a lot of people in the ocean science space, unless you're part of like an academic dynasty, your family members don't necessarily work in the ocean space. So my mother-in-law once, it's still my favorite descriptor of what I did. She said that I was a lobbyist for fish. Which
that's
was
great.
Nowhere near what I was doing, but I'll take it. I liked it.
I like that. Yeah, that's fantastic.
We should all go to conferences with our job titles as what our family members describe what we do. I think that would be a great way to strike up some interesting communication.
I love that idea. I might have to steal that. I will credit you, but that is fantastic.
I love it. Let's do it. I'm happy to have helped spur that good idea. So what does the rest of the year for the group and for SOI look like? What are you working on, you know, in the next few weeks, the next few months?
Well, I appreciate that shameless plug, and I will take you up on it. So the Strategic Communications Group for the UN Decade will be meeting again and really trying to make some traction leading up to the UN conference in Barcelona, and how we are planning and working with the different levels and groups associated with communications of the decade. As I mentioned, we have the science communications training that I'll be leading later this month. That's not an endorsed decade project, but we'll be hopefully using some of that material for the decade. Within Schmidt Ocean Institute, it is our inaugural year of science on our new vessel, and it has not disappointed. If you haven't checked out our dive streams on YouTube, I highly encourage you to do so. We have seen some amazing things. We found entire new ecosystems, hydrothermal vent fields, octopus, deep sea octopus nurseries. It has been a crazy, exciting year with lots going on and more to come. So definitely worth checking out there. And in going back, circling back to our conversation about meeting people where their interests lie, we will be at Art Basel in Miami this December for the first time, working with John Steele at Nautilus. We'll be having our Artist at Sea exhibit and bringing the oceans to that space. And it's the first time we're doing so. So I'm very, very excited about that in early December. So lots on the horizon, actually.
Wow, that is a lot on the horizon. And yeah, if I wasn't going to COP, I would, going to Miami for Art Basel sounds amazing. Is there any preview of what which of your artists at Sea are going to go? What are they going to do and talk about? Any teasers?
We are deep in planning and have some really exciting new pieces that nobody's seen before that will be debuting. We're also planning quite a bit of activities during that week as well. So there'll be some panels and events. The Bertarelli Foundation will also be there holding a one-day workshop. John, as I mentioned, from Nautilus will also be coordinating several events. So more to come soon. We will be sharing that information. But I think it's not lost on me that that's during COP. And what better way to engage people about climate and the oceans by going somewhere where there's going to be no one really focused on that? So both roles are important, but we all have to divide and conquer.
Exactly. Yeah. We at the Aspen Institute, in my day job, we host Aspen Ideas Climate every year in Miami Beach. And it's not lost on me the fact that we're in a city that will not exist at some point because of climate change. And it's really amazing to just pass, you know, Miami's such an interesting place to do any sort of ocean or climate work because you get a whole swath of global society within, you know, a few square miles of pristine white beaches. So you have your best test audience, I think, for a lot of these different communications methods and ideas.
Oh, fingers crossed.
So where can the audience go to learn more about you, the Strategic Comms Group, and Schmidt Ocean Institute?
So you should check out the Ocean Decade, oceandecade.org. You can access a lot about the decade from that website. They've just redone it. It looks beautiful. You can learn about the endorsed actions. There are community forums you can engage with through the Ocean Decade Network. There's Gen Ocean, which is a broader social campaign about engaging people with the oceans. And that is sort of your one-stop shop, best place to learn more. Get on the newsletter list. They also have some great updates that come with different activities, conferences that are coming up and such. And then for Schmidt Ocean Institute, as I mentioned, we are doing expeditions round the clock and finding all kinds of interesting things. So tune in to our dive stream on the at Schmidt Ocean YouTube channel, or you can look for the highlights if you don't want to be part of the process on our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X/Twitter. I don't know what we call it.
I still
now.
Call it Twitter because I refuse.
Schmidt Ocean. And please sign up for our newsletter as well that has highlights of all of our engagement with audiences, not just through our expeditions, but through our partnerships, our collaborations, and trying to infiltrate those non-ocean people.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me today, Carly. This was a really great overview of, the great work that you're doing, the great work that Schmidt is doing, and can only see bigger and better and greater things going forward. So thanks for walking us through all this today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I hope I made our communications group proud.
I'm sure you did. We can do a poll afterwards and make sure that that we'll do a secret ballot and make sure that the group is satisfied.
You can have them on afterwards and they can debunk everything I've said.
We'll do, I've never tried out, and we should, you know, the voice disguisers, and then we can really, yeah, get people's true opinions. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Carly. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next month.